Today's episode is brought to you by Musical Theater Radio's merch store. Looking for that perfect gift for someone or just want to treat yourself to some great musical theater themed merch? Head to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the All Things Theater button on the homepage and check out all the different designs available. And now, today's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. Today is another Discover a New Musical edition where you, the listener, and me, the host, get to learn about a new show together. Now, let's admit it, we've all seen a big red barn and thought, I could totally put on a show in there. Well, The Summer Stock, a new song and dance musical based on the classic movie, shows us how it is done. To tell us more about the show and the production that is wrapping up at the Goodspeed Theater in Connecticut is the creator of the book and additional lyrics, Sherry Steinkellner. Sherry, hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jean-Paul. I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome. Now, before we get into the show, we always want to get to know you a little bit better. So I always ask my guests for a 30-second bio. So my question is, who are you in 30 seconds?
I need to ask a favor.
Okay.
It's been a very long time and done very many things. Can I have 45?
I've never done it before, but you know what? A precedent needs to be set. 45 seconds is all yours.
Okay. So I'm a third generation theater geek from Fullerton, California. My mom and Nana loved feel good musicals, took me to every dinner theater in the OC. I matriculated at Occidental College as a theater major, but graduated as an English major. A month after graduation, I went to a cattle call for Greece. They cast me as Frenchie and I hit the road, came home and played Fanny Bryce at every dinner theater in SoCal, which made my mom and Nana very proud. But I learned I don't like taking bows. I met my husband, Billy, doing improv at the Groundlings. I learned what I like what he does, writing. And we wound up writing The Jeffersons, Who's the Boss, Show Running Cheers. And then we created two more must-see TV shows that nobody ever saw. So we moved to Santa Barbara to raise our three children. Up here, we got a call to create a Saturday morning cartoon show for Disney. We cast Nathan Lane as a little dog who goes to school. And then we turned it into a musical animated feature because Nathan Lane. And Disney said, hey, you're pretty good at this. Do you want to try a stage musical? We chose Sister Act because it seemed like the kind of feel-good story Mom and Nana would have loved, but learned that making a feel-good musical doesn't necessarily feel so good. And I wound up with blackout anxiety attacks and a Xanax prescription. Then I went back to school and got two master's degrees in psychology to figure out myself. Then over COVID, I wrote some plays and a feature and most of a novel. And I decided I like novel writing so much that I can say my official goodbye to the theater, which I did this past October, October 7th. And then on October 11th, the phone rang and I got a call to write Summer Stock and I'm back.
That was 45 seconds and wow. That was a lot of stuff in 45 seconds.
I know. I didn't know what to leave out, so I had to beg your indulgence.
I'm always excited to hear how people fill their 30 and 45 seconds. So it's awesome. That's fantastic. So obviously you were always into musical theater growing up. Was that something you were thinking about always going into, or was there always something else that you thought, you know what, I kind of like this too?
I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was pretty sure, based on everything I heard from my, you know, early teachers and classmates, that nobody would ever want to look at or listen to me. I had a teacher in the seventh grade who mixed chorus, I didn't even make a cappella, but my mixed chorus teacher told me, just move your mouth, but don't make any noise. It kind of put me off singing, even though I loved it more than anything. And probably because I loved it more than anything, yeah. I was still just shh, blend in. In fact, my words, the things that I was told along the way, sit down, shut up, basically, went into the script of Sister Act and And our friend Glenn Slater borrowed them for the score and opens the intro to Fabulous Baby as I've been hearing Sit Down and Shut Up since first grade at St. Mary's. Well, that's me.
That's funny.
I'm quoting others, being a Brillo-headed, Coke bottle glasses, pizza face. Who's going to want to look at me? I didn't have a prayer. And back then, I thought the only way to be in the theater was to be on the stage. Mm-hmm. Yep. So when I went to the theater, that's what I saw and heard, the people on the stage.
It's so true. A lot of people don't, I don't know why they don't realize, but there's an entire world behind, out of the spotlight. And when did you, are you still performing or have you transitioned off of that? And what was kind of the impetus, if you have, to get off the stage and then find backstage?
Well, it's interesting. I did eventually moved into performing. I think I'm a subverted introvert or an adapted extrovert. I'm not quite sure. I'm not an ambivert though. I think that thing of showing me is still that, you know, all of the questions are still buried down deep at the basic level. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel comfortable, as I said, taking bows or being or showing myself so much. I've learned, but it still is not easy. So it was very interesting. I mean, I can tell you the exact moment when I realized I was a writer and not an actress.
Okay.
My boyfriend, Billy, who is now my husband, Billy, wanted to be a writer. And I was already acting. I had a career. I was doing theater and commercials and the occasional sitcom and variety show as a comedian. And but still having trouble fitting in to that in my own heart. But he wanted to be a writer and I knew how to type. So I typed up his... And one day I handed back one of the spec scripts he had written. I think it was an old Laverne and Shirley, or maybe it was a Love Boat, but that's the vintage. Mm-hmm. I handed it back to him and he read it and he went, "Hey, wait a minute. What did you do here? I thought I just cleaned up a little punctuation." Okay. But apparently I'd been a little more invasive than that. We had a huge fight, one of the biggest fights of our relationship.
Wow.
And then he came back and said, "I think you made it better." And we started writing together. And it worked out really well after that. But he came to me with an idea once for a play and he didn't know how to write it. And so he wanted to improvise it with our little improv group. And I said, "No, I think you should actually write that." And the idea was to take Thornton Wilder's Our Town and write a contemporary, local, very local version of it. So all the Grover's Corner stuff would be transferred to Hollywood. And the date and time would be, you know, 1984. And we would do it like that. And I said, "I think it would be kind of fun to just write it." Yeah. And so we wrote it together and ended up putting it on in a theater where we were doing improv and with all of our improv buddies and neighbors. And it became part of an unofficial part of the LA Olympics festival because it was all about LA and all about right now.
Yeah.
We were doing everything. We were like Frank Morgan in The Wizard of Oz. Everywhere you turned, we were taking tickets and pretending to be a different identity. As I had a different identity as the publicist, and our home phone was the reservation line. And Billy was in the box office, and I was on stage, and I was playing what would be the Emily role. And I'm on stage very early in the run one night. And the person who's playing the George part gets a big laugh with a line that I thought of. And I realized then that the difference between the audience responding to words that I thought of, as opposed to the feeling that I would get when they laughed at something that came out of my mouth, but I didn't think of it, was this qualitative difference. And it was one of those Oprah aha moments where I just went, oh, I need to do that, not this.
Yeah.
That was it.
Nice. I'm always curious about people's, those aha moments. Yeah. We all have, well, not everybody, we all have them who are turning into writers and that sort of thing. Because I think our love of the theater is more important than love of the spotlight in the theater. And you don't even like the battles anyways. So
that's it's so funny. I mean, after shows, I would see that everybody in the cast was running out to greet the audience. And I just wanted to slip out the back, Jack. I didn't want to hear compliments. I didn't want to, you know, none of that. It just embarrassed me.
I 100% agree. I'm the person that, and that's why I love writing book rather than any of the other stuff, because nobody really knows who they are. And you can just slip out the back. And I've had this discussion with Robert Friedman from Gentleman's Guide and things like that. It's just, you know, nobody knows who you are, but you're so important to the show. And yeah, you can just slip away and just listen. So that's fantastic. So let's transition to this new show of yours, Summer Stock. Tell us a little bit about the, you gave us an idea of, you know, to write it, but let's hear the impetus for writing that show in the first place.
I got a call. I mean, who's going to call me at this late stage and say, would you like to write a new musical? It's the odds are, you know, just infinitesimal. But they needed somebody. The writer that they had been waiting for decided not to do it. I'm still not sure of all the details, but they needed somebody, and they needed somebody fast, because it's October. They need a designer draft by January so that they can begin pencil on paper. We need to do workshops because it's a new musical, and it's going into rehearsal the first week in June. So that's October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. 9 months. That's enough to gestate a baby. It's enough to gestate a musical. But it's impossible unless you work really, really fast and everybody agrees with you every step of the way.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I can do this with one provision. You need to let me handle the score too. And they said, you don't write music. I said, I know, but Irving Berlin does, and UB Blake does. And there's this whole great American songbook full of music in the public domain that I can adapt so that it lives in the script as if it was part of this, that these songs were part of this story. And to be able to have the freedom to tweak, you know, to tweak the songs so that they come out of the characters' mouths and further the narrative. Mm-hmm. I said, you'll give me that trust. And I had done this once before with an original musical called Hello, My Baby. I said, I can get this done for you in a couple of months. Oh. They said, oh, but all that music is, you know, turn of the century, 1927 at the latest. That's not going to sound like the era that we need, because Summer Stock takes place in 1950. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, but all of these songs that we're talking about had a bounce and were covered by Frank Sinatra, Doris Day, Judy Garland, of course,
yeah.
Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole. They all came back again and had a 1950s mid-century bounce. So there was that very first moment of taking the leap of faith when our producer, Carolyn Rossi Copeland,
yeah.
and, you know, Steve Peters and Michael Londra said, okay, if you think this will be okay. And I said, I know it'll be okay. I'm going to cherry pick the most beautiful songs for you. You know, you'll have a musical that includes It Had to Be You. And, you know, I mean, just other, just wonderful, wonderful songs.
Yeah.
The Best Things in Life Are Free. I mean, just great, magical songs. And they took a chance, and we got lucky. And Lucky Day is also one of the songs. So it is very much a Judy Garland. It's the work of a Judy Garland aficionado. And there are, I think, almost every song in the score either appears in Summer Stock or is a contemporary or is on the Judy Garland, playlist, which is easy because there's hundreds, if not thousands, of songs that she sang.
Yeah, so many great songs came out of that time. And you're right. They are still sung today. And there's a reason why, because I don't want to say anything bad about today's writing, but it's just not the same. I think it's because everybody back then was trained and they were trained how to write music, and they had to use a piano and they had to use a pencil and they had to write it. And they just knew how to craft a song. And it's incredible. So,
and these songs just go straight into your heart.
100%. They do. So you had 9 months to write this. Was there any moments that were so easy? They just flowed out. You knew what you're doing. And then what were the moments that just went, ugh? And then you just sat there and your brain just couldn't figure it out.
It's such a great question. When you have the clock ticking, there are a lot of things that can happen. You can really, at first you freak. First you freak. Then we fail. Then we fly.
Yeah.
And it's that willingness and that need. The way I put it to my kids is you go up to the edge of the cliff and you have to believe, like a Warner Brothers cartoon, you are going to fly. You have to, you have to believe you are Roadrunner and not look down, you know? So I didn't look down. I write morning pages. I do Julie Cameron's The Artist's Way practice of writing daily, every morning. Just whatever garbage is in my head.
Yeah.
Or gold. And so I actually have a very much a real-time chronicle of getting these ideas in my pajamas, in my bed, first thing in the morning. Because I don't do, Julia Cameron says you have to write by hand, but I write it on my computer because I can go faster and think faster.
Yep.
And then I can also search for it. Yes. So, yeah. So a lot of the ideas, a lot of the fear and freaking out came before I went to bed and kept me up. And a lot of the taking that next step and flying, I woke up with good ideas. And I just, like I told you, I went to college, I went back to get my master's degrees, not just in psychology, but in depth psychology, where Carl Jung and James mm-hmm. Hill, you know, all of these wonderful people tell us that there's much more going on than our conscious knows.
For sure.
I trusted the muses, and the muses showed up.
So when was this? What year was this? This was last year? No.
This year.
This year. Okay.
We still haven't had our anniversary of the first phone call.
Wow. That's crazy.
Crazy. And then a lot of the interesting, what should have been big obstacles, like putting it on its feet in April, so around the 6 month mark, for an invited audience of people who were going to not only give us their response, but some of them were decision makers. And I was told that a couple of my first guesses were not going to fly. And there was a secondary love story that I just was going to have to remove. And so that was like a big, expletive deleted moment. And then luckily, the flight from New York to Santa Barbara includes a 3-hour layover in San Francisco, and sitting at the airport, I didn't have anything else to do but, you know, ideate over it.
Yeah.
And a new song came to me and a new story was suggested, and I was able to just like find a new way to tell a love story that is not a love story, but a different kind of a You Complete Me story. And so it was awful, and then it was ecstatic.
Yeah. It's funny because people who don't realize, who aren't in the business, you know, they just see the final musical when really you've probably written 2.5 musicals beforehand if you go back and look at everything. And it's crazy that way. But so it's April, you've done that reading. When was it supposed to go up again? When was the date for that?
We had hard dates. We needed to rehearse starting June 6th. Okay. We needed to meet our first audience on, I think it was July 6th or 7th, July 7th. And then it opened, the press opening was July 27th.
Wow.
So that's, you know, in TV, when I worked in television, if you're working with a live studio audience, you're putting up a little play every week.
Yeah.
And you learn to just, some things you just are going to take a shot and hope the audience gets, likes it.
Yeah.
And if not, you're going to fix it on its feet. And that was just the ethos that we had to adopt.
So you're almost perfectly situated with all the stuff you'd done in the past, with all the sitcoms and the live stuff and the quick turnaround for everything. It almost was kismet. Is that maybe one of the reasons they gave you a call? Or
I would like to think so. I would like to think kismet. Some call it serendipity. My nana would call it beshert. It was it kind of felt, and I think that yes, it was right for me, but also finding Doug Besterman to take all of these songs from different composers and different eras, and most of them are 32-bar popular songs. They're not musical theater numbers with big blowout dance breaks and everything. But Doug Besterman is magic. Have you had Doug on the show?
No, I don't know. No, I haven't talked with Doug before.
Oh, my maestro. He wanted to, he said yes, first of all. He wasn't busy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. And he's a multi-award winning, and he does orchestrations for Schmigadoon. He did The Producers. He did, he's worked with Woody Allen and Mel Brooks. So he's taken old music and made it new again, made it sing. So he said yes. And that was another Bashir kismet moment. And then it was like, well, who are we going to get to say the Gene Kelly role and to be able to dance and sing and have all of that muscle and all that grace and all of that charm and ease? And I said, all I can think about is Corbin Blue. I did a deep dive on his YouTubes and just watched them over and over and thought, and wrote the part to that kind of a contemporary iteration of what Gene Kelly did indelibly. And they said, well, you're never going to get Corbin, to come to Goodspeed for 3 months. What? Yeah. I said, I know, but just try. Can we just try? And, when he signed on, it was like, wow, something's happening here.
That's incredible. So tell us about the production itself and some of the people involved with it. I know you talked about Doug already, but the director, we discussed off camera, the Donna Fior, who, she's a legend up here in Canada, the Stratford and everything. But had you worked with her before or seen her work before?
No, but she was connected to the show already.
Oh, really?
So we were a blind date. And so, you know, it's that can go any which way, right?
For sure. Yeah.
I fell in love when I went and looked up her YouTube. I think the first one I saw was her dance break. She does a drumline dance break to 76 trombones. And they fly. The dancers fly. And I just went, oh my God, we could have this? And then I just, again, did one of my YouTube days where I just watched everything I could see and just went, oh, this is amazing. She doesn't know me yet, but I feel like I know her and I'm in love. To have that kind of energy and creativity and humor in dance. And it was all I saw, but it was great.
Wow. I always ask this when you were in the rehearsal process, you know, was there moments that were surprising to you that the actors or the scenes just popped or they brought something different that you didn't even think of?
Well, Jean-Paul, that can cut both ways.
It's true.
Yes and yes. I mean, I have to be true to my guild. As writers, we know how every line is meant to be said.
Yeah.
We know every pause is and every rise and every fall. So we have this ideal version.
Yeah.
When they exceed it, it's just like, holy crap. I mean, we have Vianne Cox, who can find laughs with the slightest turn of her head, or taking two steps forward, she gets a laugh. I can't write that. I can't anticipate that. It's just like, oh, you gods of comedy, just say or don't say anything you want. We also have Will Roland in the cast who plays her son, which is in the film, the Eddie Bracken role. And he is so versatile that he can take one line. Like we have a line, I'll just pull it out of context, but the line is, I love cherries. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just a line that I intended to be said with great enthusiasm. He can turn in. Have you ever read the book Eats, Shoots, and Leaves? You know, where they're talking about, oh, it's a grammar book. I won't go into detail on that. But basically, you can say, he found so many ways to say, I love cherries. I think he is still finding them, 52 performances. And so it's like, just go, Will. Just teach me all the things that can be done with three words.
So the run is just about done. Well, it'll be done probably by the time this airs. What was it like sitting in the audience? Because you've already had one show. You had on Broadway, you had, you know, Sister Act. You wrote that, the book to that with your husband. What was it like sitting in the audience and watching that, another show?
Well, if we want to compare apples to oranges, or, you know, nuns to farmers, Sister Act was a very different experience. And Sister Act changed a lot from our run at the London Palladium and that first European iteration or UK iteration to when it came over to New York, for a lot of reasons that have been documented that are very painful for me to discuss. And so when I sat at opening night at Sister Act, I didn't really recognize a lot of it. I recognized the shape of the show that we had conceived and all the songs that I was there for the birth of, but a lot of the dialogue just had been changed for reasons that, like I said, have been documented by Michael Riedel, and I don't need to discuss it. So the experience of sitting with an audience for Summerstock and seeing something that is so purely what I intended and what I meant in my heart and my head and never imagined I would ever see, much less that I would see sitting with 400 people and that they would get it. Yeah. but they would laugh and cheer and really, you know, just really like the things I like. And I mean, we're going all the way back to little me in Orange County, listening to, you know, laying on my shag carpet, listening to my plastic turntable, my mom's albums of Hello Dolly and Pajama Game, you know, that it was just a genuine feel good musical with where people come together and make something beautiful. Nice. And that's, you know, certainly Sister Act still has all of those qualities. And I adore that about it. But Summer Stock was less complicated.
It is. They're the same, but they're completely different. It's like you said, apples and oranges or hamburgers and whatever other things you can eat. They're edible, but they're not the same. But so now that the show is essentially done, where's it going from here? Can you tell us? Is there plans for it?
There are hopes and dreams for it. And there is certainly momentum. It was extremely gratifying that in addition to the audience getting it, the critics embraced what we were trying to do as a group. And you know, the wholeheartedness of it. And so there is a lot of momentum, but I have no answers. I'm not just keeping secrets. I actually have
no, and that's totally legit, because you sometimes you just don't know. But in the moment, congratulations for that. Just, you know, I've heard good things about it, and obviously the critics and the audience has enjoyed it as well. And you know what? Sometimes as long as the audience likes it, sometimes that's all that matters. And as long as you're happy with it as well. So congratulations on the show. And I wish I did had the opportunity to get down there and see it, but maybe I'll be able to see it somewhere else. So who knows?
That's, you know, knocking awesome. My people.
So before we go, is there anything else going on with you that you can talk about? Any projects that you're working on that we should look for in the future?
Oh, golly. As a proud member of the Writers Guild of America West, we are still on strike.
Okay.
So I cannot promote my media projects.
Okay.
But I do have a very beloved feature that I wrote, I conceived and wrote during lockdown. I was out in my garden one day, about 6 months into isolation. I was in my garden just looking at bees, and which we have bees, which I feel happy about. And I was thinking, I wonder how long Henry David Thoreau was in his cabinet, you know, at Walden Pond, looking at nature. And I came in to Google that, of course. And the answer is 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days. He lived in that cabin, isolated. I got kind of excited about Henry David Thoreau as a romantic lead in a historic fantasy rom-com. Hmm. It is an historic fantasy because, by all accounts, Henry David Thoreau never hooked up. And so that made him all the sexier to me. So my feature lives in that world. It's a magical contemporary historical fantasy comedy, romantic. There's that. And then I have a novel that is my escape, and it might only ever exist as my place to go. But maybe one day it will also exist in the world for other people like me to go to as well. And playing with time, I think that is the constant. And I think applies to Summer Stock as well. This idea that past and present can really live in the same space and appreciate each other.
Very nice. Very nice. So I guess the final question is, you said you weren't going to do any more theater. You got a phone call. Are you going back to the no more theater, or do you think, you don't know, just maybe another phone call will get you going?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, the eternal question, there used to be a game show. I'm going to do an analogy here. The game show was called Press Your Luck.
Do you remember? I know it well, yes.
You remember? No whammies, no whammies, no whammies. Yes. And then you press it. And if you get a whammy, all the good stuff goes away. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of in the no whammies, no whammies moment. this has been a very good experience. And do I just say thank you for that?
Yeah.
Or do we press our...
I guess until that next phone call, you don't know, right? You just don't know what the project is going to be, so...
You know, as a writer, it's very hard to say no when anybody says, I want you for anything.
Yeah.
Because you're just not used to that. It's like, wait, somebody wants me?
Well... Hopefully we will get to see something. If not, we would totally understand. Maybe your book will come out and anything else you write. But it was a wonderful experience meeting you, learning about Summer Stock, and hopefully we'll see it go somewhere else and I'll be able to see it live on stage sometime.
That would be really fun. And I would love to talk to you about it if you do.
Well, if you have any more musicals, let me know. I'll have you back on. We'll discuss it more because I love helping promote new works, because I was just talking. I had an interview earlier. Lin-Manuel doesn't need to help promoting. he's got enough people to help him. I want to help the people, you know, who have got the new shows that, you know, are out there and not on Broadway right now, but maybe can get there. And I'll do what I can to help you.
I love that. Thank you so much. And on behalf of my fellow non-Lin-Manuels.
Well, thank you as well. All right. So we were just talking with Sherry Steinkellner about their new show, Summer Stock, A New Song and Dance, that is just wrapping up at Goodspeed in Connecticut. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion. That is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.